Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and of course Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films The Death of Robin Hood, Leviticus, and The Wizard of the Kremlin.
The Death of Robin Hood has a very appropriate title because this, in fact, is a movie that, spoiler coming here, ends with the death of Robin Hood. And the whole movie before that, roughly 2 hours of it, is building up to the death of Robin Hood. And when we start the movie, Robin Hood has already been around for a very long time. And this is not your traditional, conventional Robin Hood movie, the kind of thing I used to look at when I was a kid, where Robin Hood and his merry men were rather merry. And Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor and all that sort of thing. Well, this new movie, The Death of Robin Hood, is, after all this time, blowing the lid off the Robin Hood legend. It's really revealing what it claims is the real truth about Robin Hood, who turns out to have been not such a fine fellow after all. This movie was written and directed by Michael Sarnowski, and I say it has quite a lot of action in it and a whole lot of death and mayhem and melancholy. It is not a happy movie. In fact, the whole first part of it, I would say maybe the first 15, 20 minutes, are just one horrible, grisly killing after another. So be ready for that if you go to see The Death of Robin Hood. Anyway, it takes place in 1247, a very long time ago. And there we are out in the forest, and there is Robin Hood. And he is now, as I said earlier, getting on in years. And he is kind of upset that everybody thinks he's a great hero because he knows that he's never been a great hero. He's always been basically a marauder and a killer and all of that. And in fact, very early on in the film, he runs across a young person and kind of starts to express his regret about his past life. But then all the horrible killings start one after another. Eventually, Robin Hood meets up with his old friend, Little John. In fact, one thing we have quite late in the movie is an account, just verbal, of how he first met Little John. And that's rather like the myth that we know from the Robin Hood that maybe we heard about when we were kids. They met on a bridge and they had a fight. And after the fight, they embraced each other and they became fast friends. So we hear about that. And Little John now becomes an important character in the movie, too. But both he and Robin Hood are now living under aliases. Robin Hood calls himself Randolph. Little John now calls himself Edward. And then they have a big attack on a farm, and they kill a bunch of people, but a couple of people survive, and one of them is a young girl named Margaret, and she becomes an important character in the movie. Fairly early on in the film, Robin Hood is very gravely injured, and he's taken off to a priory, a religious retreat, where the prioress nurses him back to health. Takes a long time, and he has to teach himself to walk again and stuff like that. And there he is known as Randolph. And he meets a couple of other important characters in the movie, including the prioress, whose name is Bridget, and also a man with leprosy, or as it's now called, Hansen's disease, whose face is all covered with a mask. He's a really good character. I found him quite interesting. And anyway, they also become significant characters in the movie. And then there's a whole lot more intrigue and skullduggery and a bit more violence and whatnot. And eventually the whole thing culminates, as I already said, in what the title promises us, which is the death of Robin Hood. But we have before that the nicest part of the movie, which is where Robin Hood really wants to protect that little girl who I mentioned earlier. Her name is Margaret. And they develop a very nice relationship, among other things. He teaches her how to shoot arrows with her little bow made out of a bent branch of a tree, and that's a rather nice part of the dream. And then at the very, very end, Robin Hood goes through more kind of remorse over his past life and so forth and so on. And finally, he dies. And then we know the movie is finally over. I have to say, the movie doesn't really have to be 2 hours long, but hey, it is. Hugh Jackman is the Robin Hood of the movie, and he does a very energetic performance. He's a good actor, and he is one of the main reasons to see the movie. So if you want to see an action movie with a whole lot of killing and death and whatnot, then The Death of Robin Hood will definitely please you. For me, it struck me as a bit much. It was kind of repetitious. It did the same sort of thing over and over again. It was all very well done. Technically, it's a first-rate movie. And again, Hugh Jackman is very good. And most of the secondary cast is very good too, especially the guy who plays the man with leprosy. But again, it just was a movie that didn't especially appeal to me. So it is apparently finding a pretty large audience, and it's gotten pretty good reviews. So people are enjoying it, maybe more than I did. I would have to go back to my old formula, GNG. It's a good movie, not a great movie. Next of all, Leviticus, a movie which I liked rather less than The Death of Robin Hood. Leviticus is yet another one of the current spate of horror movies that are flooding the scene. Very often, low budget horror movies. In this case, it's an Australian horror movie. Now, the horror movie flood or feast or whatever it is we want to call it is doing a whole lot of good for the movie industry and the movie theater industry. People are coming to see these movies, and these movies, some of them are getting really good reviews. The reviews for Leviticus have been ecstatic, most of them. Not mine, but most of them have been, largely because of the cast, which includes Joe Bird and Stacey Clawson. And I have to mention Mia Wasikowska. There was a time when she appeared to be in every movie that was made. She hasn't been quite so visible lately, but she does a nice job in this movie. In any case, Leviticus is another one of these horror movies that is really bringing people back to the movies, and I'm very glad about that, and certainly bringing young people back to the movies. Leviticus is very much a young person's movie. The main characters are young, and it's all about coming of age and all of that. Again, I didn't like it, but a lot of people are enjoying it a whole lot. In any case, what's the movie about? Well, first of all, the title, of course, is one of the books, one of the early books of the Old Testament. And it is a book of the Old Testament where there is a very firm prohibition laid down against same-sex relationships. And that is very much what this movie is about. The main characters are two adolescents, basically teenagers. And they are having a same-sex relationship. And the way it all starts is that one of these young men, his name is Name, and his mother, they move to a very isolated town in Australia. And she is very religious, and she immediately joins the town's very, very conservative religious community. And the young man, Name, really attempts to come to terms with the religion. And his mother is very involved in it, and he's now part of the community at large and all that. But hey, he is a gay kid, and that's just the way he is. He develops a secret relationship with another local teenager whose name is Ryan. But then he sees Ryan kissing the son of the leader, the pastor, the vicar of this religious community. And that, of course, is a big source of conflict in the movie. So Name not only knows that the religious leaders, the reverend, that his son is a secret gay kid, but he is now very, very jealous because he is in love with the one who the vicar's son is having the relationship with. And so you have all of this immediate conflict and jealousy and rivalry and so forth start. So anyway, the religious people bring in what they call a deliverance healer, who does a ritual which is meant to get the same-sex desires out of the boys. Of course, it doesn't work, and there's all kinds of agony involved in this ritual and so forth. And Ryan then really retreats into himself, and people are bullying him, and there's all kinds of misery going on. And well, I won't go on. The movie gets very complicated from there, and eventually it comes to an outcome. Of course, the movie does have an ending, but there's a whole lot of rivalry and jealousy and a lot of violence and supernatural horror that go on before we finally get to the end of the movie. Now, one thing I found about Leviticus is that the Australian accents were sometimes really impenetrable. Now, I have been watching and writing about and reviewing Australian movies for decades and decades, and I have known many an Australian filmmaker, and I do not find Australian accents particularly daunting. I have to say, in this movie, I found they often were. If you want to watch Leviticus, I suggest you go to a showing where it's open captioned or something, or wait till it's streaming and you can get captions on your flat screen. That aside, it's a well-done movie. The acting is good. I especially like seeing Mia Wasikowska. But by and large, I found the movie, well, let's just say, a whole lot of fuss about nothing. Also, the basic themes of the very conservative religious opposition to same-sex identities, is a very, very important theme to be discussed in today's day and age when there is so much conflict between conservative religious communities and same-sex individuals who usually discover that they are same-sex rather than deciding to become same-sex orientation people. This deserves much more serious treatment than it gets in Leviticus. That's another problem I had with the movie. I know it's a horror film, but hey, this is a subject, a topic of very current, timely interest, and I think it deserves a whole lot more serious thought than the movie Leviticus gives it. That said, Leviticus is a well enough done movie. It was written and directed by Adrian Chiarella, who I think has real talent. So by all means, go to see it. If this is something that's up your alley, whatever else happens, it certainly is bringing a whole lot of people back to the movie theaters. It's getting very, very positive reviews from all kinds of people. So you don't necessarily have to listen to me. It just didn't appeal to me a whole lot. Finally, a movie I really did like. It's been out for a bit now, but it has started streaming, and I think it's a good picture. Reviews here have been rather mixed, a lot of them negative, but I thought it was a pretty good picture. The Wizard of the Kremlin. This is a movie by Olivier Assayas. He is a French filmmaker and a very, very talented French art filmmaker. This movie is very much in English, takes place mainly in Russia, first of all, in the old Soviet Union, and then in Russia. But it's a really interesting political movie. Now, a lot of the very, very mixed reviews for this movie has singled out the performance of Jude Law, who plays the current leader of Russia, Vladimir Putin. Jude Law gives, I agree with a lot of the critics, a very, very good performance. But to look at a lot of the reviews this movie has been getting, both the good ones and the bad ones, they all say Jude Law is really amazing as Vladimir Putin. True enough, but he is such a secondary character in this movie. The Wizard of the Kremlin is really another character who is played by Paul Dano, an actor I really like, and he is the real star of the movie, and he is really, really, really good. He is, in fact, the Wizard of the Kremlin. So we have a movie that starts out in the old Soviet days, and we see the basically a whole lot of drama surrounding the fall of the old Soviet Union. And then we have this character whose name is Vadim, played by Paul Dano, who is just a very, very clever guy. And he moves in and he starts manipulating people and manipulating situations and manipulating ideologies and becoming a real maker and shaker, a mover in the declining Soviet Union and then the rise of the new Russia. And we have little appearances along the way by other people who were involved. We hear about Gorbachev for a while. We see Boris Yeltsin. But the main character is Vadim, who is traversing all this and manipulating people, as I said, in situations and whatnot. And then eventually he plays a key part in Putin becoming the leader of the new Russia, the new semi-capitalist Russia. And we have a whole lot of Jude Law now in the movie, although again, he's a very secondary character. And we have a whole lot of just seeing maybe what Putin is really like, because he, of course, becomes a real manipulator and a real shaper of events, and somebody who is always out for his own interests first and dragging the new Russia along in ways that will benefit him and his friends and what used to be called the nomenklatura in the old Soviet Union, the elite, the aristocracy, who are now no longer based on nobility and birth and all of that, or just on favor with the regime, but on money. Money, money. And of course, also favor with the regime. Still very, very important. So, The Wizard of the Kremlin is a really interesting movie, I thought. It's quite long, it's well over 2 hours, but it really held me all the way. Reviews again have been very mixed, but I found it a really, really watchable movie. There are some subplots involving some women who never really develop into fully rounded characters. Jeffrey Wright is around, an actor I always love seeing as a journalist who kind of chronicles a lot of the stuff that's going on. But mainly we have Paul Dano, and secondarily we have Jude Law giving marvelous performances in a movie that's about real things, and that seems to have some relationship with the real truth of those real things, namely the fall of the old Soviet Union, the rise of the new Russia, and the crucial role of power and capitalism in all of this. The Wizard of the Kremlin, a pretty darn good movie, in my opinion. Give it a shot. It's a good picture. So that is my semi-current event story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Death of Robin Hood, Leviticus, and The Wizard of the Kremlin.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.